You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Looks just like the one next to it, and the one next to that, and the one next to that. A young couple live in it.
Give Ken a kiss.
You are so unlucky.
With their three children. And something more.
Last
night, do you remember
when you woke up and you said
you're here?
Uh-huh.
Well, who did you mean? Who's here?
TV people.
Something funny going on here next door. Something,
We were wondering if maybe you had experienced any disturbances lately.
What kind of disturbances?
I don't know whatever's over this house.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Retrospective. I am here today with Andy Comer.
Howdy, howdy.
Patrick Campbell.
Hello, it's good to be here.
Today, on this episode of the Youth Critic Retrospective, we are going to be talking about Poltergeist. We're celebrating the 35th anniversary now, unlike the other episodes, where we kind of try to get it close to the release date or on the release, you know, on the release date or on its birthday. Poltergeist doesn't, in 35 years from now, doesn't come out till actually this weekend, doesn't come out until June 4th. I went ahead and did this episode because I really wanted to do Star Trek for the weekend it came out, because to get into more of the Trek, then wanted to get more of the Trekkers and get, you know, wanted to do a little bit more of a Trek episode for Trek tribute for that podcast. So this weekend / when we release this on Tuesday, we're going to be talking about Poltergeist, but you are getting it a week early from its birthday. And that is, so starting us off, I'm actually, usually on the retrospective, we have talked about the production history in the past, where I kind of went through some of the production history and some of cool tidbits about it. But this week, I'm going to let Patrick Campbell about the Poltergeist production history. So Patrick, why is this movie directed by Tobe Hooper, but people still say it's directed by Spielberg?
Because there's a lot of crisscross information, and a lot of the ways that this whole situation was kind of looked at is very different than most movies. Steven Spielberg had actually come up with the story. He is credited for the story. He's credited for his script work on it as well. And he's credited as the producer. He was a producer on the film who was on set every day. But the same time that this movie was actually being made, he was actually also making E.T. At the same time. So at the time, he was working at Universal, and he had a clause in his contract that actually stopped him from directing anything else while he was working on E.T. So because of that, he really couldn't do anything. And so both films were set for the summer of 1982, which, of course, for many, Time Magazine, Newsweek had been calling it the summer of Spielberg. It was a really big deal, but they needed to get a director that they believed could come onto the production and take what Steven had been thinking about and really looking at doing and bringing it to life. The thing was, is that the director they were hiring was more of a point and shoot and do what Steven Spielberg wants versus really making their own film, which is why the movie feels so much like a Steven Spielberg movie and not someone else's film, because Spielberg actually storyboarded the entire film from beginning to end. He was on set every day for outside of 3 days when he was out in Hawaii with George Lucas. This was something that was actually corroborated later when they were talking, because the producer, Frank Marshall, has even said, no, Spielberg really did do half the storyboards, or all the storyboards. Hooper would say that he had done half, but many in the production said, no, it really was Steven who was working on this film, and he was really the one behind the scenes. Even a lot of the actors basically were saying he really was the de facto director on the picture. Even with some of them going as far as saying that the entire time that they were on set, Steven was the one who was actually directing them. Some actually, I don't know how true it is. There is rumors that Toby was actually on drugs on the time of filming, which made him erratic, and he had a hard time filming. I don't know how true that is, but I do know that Spielberg was on set much of the time and was very much in control of the production, even though he was working on E.T. at the same time. It's one of the most interesting Hollywood stories. I mean, this thing was so crazy in the rumor mill on how it was put together and how it came together that the Directors Guild actually opened an investigation into the production and had to look in to see who should actually get the director's credit on this film, which is not something that you hear of very often, but it happened here. Of course, outside of this production, there's many rumors about the curse that surrounded this production later on and that kind of hounded the cast for many years. Of course, as many know, the two young actresses in this movie would tragically pass away, one of cancer, and then one was actually strangled to death the summer the movie opened, which was very, very heartbreaking. And so a lot of that comes to the fact that some people said that they used real skeletons in the scenes towards the end of the film. And that is a very Tobe Hooper thing to do if they had actually done that. Whether of course not, of course, that any of that is true is very much hearsay. But this was a very interesting production to follow, both behind the scenes while it was being made to even 35 years later, where we're still debating whether this is a Spielberg movie or a Tobe Hooper film. And I think that it's easy to see why most people really do believe that it's a Steven Spielberg movie, because it looks and feels just like one. All the shots look like a Steven Spielberg movie. And it's very apparent that he was very, very hands-on when it came to the storyboarding, to the act, who it was cast. Everything about this movie feels like a Steven Spielberg film.
All right. Feedback. Anyway.
What was that? Sorry.
Wait. Hold on. Well, the reason why this is such an interesting one, and I wanted someone who had known this for so long, is because even when I was watching the movie, I was still thinking, because I have seen a couple of Tobe Hooper movies. I mean, I've seen I've, along with everyone else, has seen the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and just, you know, and knowing kind of what a Tobe Hooper movie is, I know how bonkers his movies get, and Poltergeist is a pretty bonkers, insane film. It's more tame than, you know, some of his other work, or it's really the most tame of his other work, but
that's because of the production or the producing of Spielberg.
Sure, but still, it's a pretty bonkers movie. I mean, a guy's face, like, he rips it off in like a dream scene, and it's like very, like, the makeup is very low budget, like, it feels like something that, you know, a craft that, you know, a technique that Tobe Hooper would use. And there's little moments like that where I was like, it's still Tobe Hooper, but then, you know, of course, there's the Warner shot in the, you know, graveyard. And then there's, you know, I mean, there's, you know, and then, you know, there's, you know, the Spielberg, you know, family moments. So it's like, it's interesting. And then, you know, and then as I did some research this week, it's also interesting how in almost every interview, in every behind the scenes story, it's Spielberg in the front and center of everything. And you occasionally in behind the scenes stuff see Toby Hooper just like in the background, maybe talking to a camera person. But really, it is Spielberg front and center. And even when I try to look for some Toby Hooper interviews, even Toby Hooper doesn't really like talk much about Spielberg working on it. That's why for me, this is probably one of the more interesting production histories I've covered on this retrospective series so far, because it's just crazy. And to hear that rumor that they used real skeletons in the movie, that's insane. That's insane if it's true.
I want to chime in real quick too, because as we're talking about it, one thing that should be really noted, because as we discuss this film's creation and why a lot of people say it was a Spielberg movie, Spielberg was even quoted saying that Tobe isn't what you'd call a take charge sort of guy. He's just not a strong presence on a movie set. If a question was asked and an answer wasn't immediately forthcoming, I'd jump up and say what we could do. Tobe would nod in agreement, and that became the process of the collaboration.
Absolutely. So, Andy, what do you think about all this? I know you know this history as well, but what do you think about all this?
It's just insane. I've heard that, yeah, like all the stuff that Patrick was talking about like he might have been on like doing drugs and stuff and not able to fully commit, like put his mind completely into the picture, so that Spielberg ended up taking over. I've heard all kinds of different things. And there's been a couple times where, I don't know if you can find like video interviews, but like there's been interviews that I've read where Hooper is just I've already talked about this enough. I don't need, he feels like he's answered all the questions he needs to, so he's never going to really explain it ever again. So you have to, I guess, dig through the internet to try to find what his opinion on everything was. But yeah, this movie definitely, with how dark it gets at points, is like definitely Hooper, but then like the magical moments and family moments, like you said, are definitely Spielberg. And it's just like, I think that's why I love it, because it's just like a melding of the two, and it just works great. Like, this is my like a top 10 favorite horror movie of all time for me, and it's definitely like the only like haunted house type movie that I really enjoy watching. Most haunted house movies like annoy the hell out of me. This is one of the very few that I actually enjoy.
Yeah, I'm kind of in your camp, because I'm not huge on the haunted house thing, but I think really for me, it's more than anything, it's a Spielberg movie. And I think that's why I like it so much. And I think the truth is if you can't really find interviews with Tobe talking about the movie and all these things, it's very obvious this was a production that went through a lot of rumors and a lot of things like that. But at the end of the day, I think it feels more like a Spielberg movie. I don't know what it is. It's just, there's something about the magic in the film mixed with the dark side of Spielberg that we don't see that often. But it is a side of Spielberg that exists. This is the same side of Spielberg that we saw just, you know, a couple years after this, when you see Gremlins. It's the same Spielberg that you see in Temple of Doom. This was a really dark period of time for Spielberg, and that's very telling. And when you watch things like E.T., and when you watch Gremlins, when you watch a lot of these films, even Back to the Future and the Goonies have very dark undertones compared to a lot of his other work, because he was going through a divorce at the time. He was going through a lot, and it shows in these movies. And these movies are really about, you know, trying to pull and keep family together and all these things. But the truth of the matter is you can see that more than anything coming through in his films. And I think that Poltergeist and E.T. especially show the importance of what trying to hold a family together against all odds really is. And I think that's very, very interesting on the film. And I really, really love this film for that reason alone. It's a really special film. It's one that I remember terrorized me a lot when I was growing up. And the more that I really fell in love with film, this became one of the most interesting stories when it came to the production of a film, because it very few films are as heavily debated on who directed it than Poltergeist is.
Yeah, it's going into this rabbit hole was just, it was truly fascinating. It reminded me a lot of the whole, I hate to keep bringing this movie up. I really do. It reminds me of the whole situation that happened on Fantastic Four. Like, of all the stuff you heard on all those, you know, Reddit posts and 4chan about what was going on set with Trank and Kimberg. And you're just like, you know, and this felt there. I saw a lot of parallels, you know, here and there, but obviously Fantastic Four is no, holds no candlelight to Poltergeist at all.
I think
so. It's interesting.
A fair comparison. I mean, at least production wise, because both were hounded by a lot of rumors. Both were, one of course became critical and commercial darling, the other didn't, but their production problems and things are similar.
Right. So let's get into the movie. So Andy, why don't you tell us why it's in your top 10? I know you said, you know, it's your favorite haunted house movie, but why is that?
Because of the characters and the setup and the story, the magic that is a Spielberg vibe that it goes throughout the film, just how bonkers it actually is. This movie definitely, I don't remember the first time I saw it, because I remember glimpses. I remember like remembering glimpses of it, like different stuff. The second one is one that I saw more like when I was younger, because I always thought about the tequila scene in the second one. And I always thought that that was in the first one, even though I'd like watch it again. It just like always, for some reason, I just thought of that was in the first one. And then I finally, like about 10 years ago, I just realized that I was just stupid. But like these movies of all three of them have kind of stuck with me and in some form or another. But like, just besides Child's Play, I never really seen a lot of movies where like kids are being like tortured and like demented, or like taken like by like spirits and stuff like that, and in a way that, you know, it felt like it was a possibility. And like the build up of every like tension scene, like with the trees and with like their fear of the doll and the clown, everything was just built perfectly. And you know, it's a near perfect film to me. Just a few flaws, and all the behind the scenes footage is always, or the footage production that we've been talking about is always, you know, had me really interested in learning more about it. And the fact that Spielberg would even go this dark always fascinated me. And Texas Chainsaw Massacre is one of the dirtiest movies that I enjoy watching. It, like, that movie makes me feel dirty just watching it. And
it does.
And it's just fascinating that he would go from that to this, and it's just like a completely different feeling. And that, like, it's just a whole combination of all these things that just make me like want to watch it again and again. And like, it's quotable, like, they're here and the house is clear and stuff like that.
That line, "they're here," is probably one of the top movie lines of all time.
It's definitely top 15, top 20.
Like, we all know that moment. We all see that moment. We all know that moment. That's one of those culturally ingrained moments in film that has transcended.
Yeah. It is. Like, that is like one of those things that it's been in so many other things. It's almost like a Star Wars reference.
Yeah.
Because it's been parodied so many times. And it's actually probably a lot of people that don't even know what it's actually from. But it's just, yeah, it's just so, so good.
Patrick?
I mean, I think for me, the thing is when we were growing up, I watched a lot of movies, obviously. That's why I am the way I am. But Poltergeist was one that always stayed with me because it always horrified me. But I was always wanting to go back and watch it again because I was always so enamored by the characters. I was kind of talking to Kale about it last night when I was rewatching it. Is like, if anything, Craig T. Nelson is, you know, movie dad of the year in this movie. He's so damn good. And there's something about him and his family and these characters that just works so well. And you really feel drawn to them and you really care about them and you really want to believe that they're going to get through this thing all right, because everything about the movie feels kind of unnerving. It kind of makes you feel off filter. It makes you feel great in a good way, and that's really a credit to the people behind the scenes and the world that they created. I mean, this movie has surreal imagery. This movie's got an amazing Jerry Goldsmith score that just, that theme is so good. And I mean, everyone in the movie is fantastic. And there's just something about it that just pulls you in. I mean, between Craig T. Nelson and Heather O'Rourke, who of course is Carol, you can't not love this movie. It's just something that pulls you in and it doesn't really let go while you're watching it. And it's got maybe one of the great third act takeouts of all time, leading to the finale.
Yeah, definitely.
So for me, that was a big thing in and of itself, because a lot of movies, you can see the twist coming. In this one, you didn't. It really felt like it was going to be over. And I remember the first time I saw it, it felt over and I went, oh, wow, like that was a really good movie. And, you know, it's great that they got away and they didn't. And I loved that because it pulls you back in for those last 10 minutes and then you really don't know what's going to happen, because that happy ending is seemingly over. So that's just something really intricately special about this movie. And man, do I love it.
Yeah, I love this movie. This is actually this is one of my favorite movies that we've done on this. I know we're only four or five episodes in, but this has been my favorite of the retrospectives movies I've seen so far. And I just love how well crafted it is. It always surprises me that like with going back on the back behind the scenes footage, surprises me how much there was so much of Spielberg in this, and how, you know, it's just, you know, everything, like, this movie shouldn't have been as good as it is because of everything that had happened. But it still is a great film, and it's so well crafted in every way. Like, you're right, like, Jerry Goldsmith is incredible. That score of just, like, the nice little family life theme. And for me, what I liked about this movie is, you're right, the reason why we don't get a lot of great haunted house movies is after you've done one or two, like, what can you do that's different? And I feel like what Poltergeist did so unique for its time is setting in the suburbs. Like, new houses can also be, you know, haunted as well. So I feel like that's really good. So I feel like that was a nice, you know, addition, nice twist to the haunted house genre. And then you guys said you didn't see the last 10 minutes coming, but I sort of did, mostly because I've seen enough horror movies to know that, you know, it's going to happen. There's always the fake out. So in my mind, logically, I was like, well, this also was still happening while Carol Ann was still here. Like, she was, while she was in the present in the house, like, before she went to the, you know, the underworld. So the psychic says, it's all clean now. And I was like, well, what did you do that made it clean? You just got her out of the underworld. Why aren't you not booking it? But, you know, that's minor problems compared to everything else I love about the movie. I even love what the movie says about, you know, there's always an undercurrent, especially in early Spielberg films, about how capitalism, you know, how the ideals of capitalism just doesn't give a fuck about people, or doesn't give a fuck about people that are, you know, things that are, should be sacred. And of course the idea here is a business, they just built over, they just moved all the tombstones and they just built all these houses, the subdivision on top of, you know, this sacred bear, this sacred like burial ground, this, you know, cemetery, and all these people are pissed. And of course there's even, you know, foreshadowing to, you know, why it is when, you know, the bird is, you know, being unearthed by, you know, by tractors. And so, I mean, just for me, I really dug this movie a lot. And so I have to ask you guys about this, this kind of silly twist of it all. Like, everything was started just because this real estate group just was like, we have all this property, let's just build houses on it and not like really care about all the dead people that are under it.
To be honest, it's not shocking. And it, in a lot of ways, it feels like a very contemporary message on the way that we treat a lot of things. The truth is that we're so quick to make a buck and not think about the things that we're doing and the people that it hurts, or the, you know, you're literally hurting people, or, you know, trying to forget about the past by building over the past. And sometimes that stuff doesn't want to go away. And I thought that that was the perfect way to build this movie, because you're legitimately, the idea of building over burial grounds and stuff is very interesting. And it's something that's very much talked about in circles when it comes to ghost stories and real paranormal investigations and stuff. And so it's the perfect catalyst for a movie like this. You know, a Southern California housing development seems like the perfect quaint place, but because the guys were just trying to make a few bucks instead of actually, you know, making sure that the bodies were exhumed and moved, they built over them.
Respectfully, yeah.
Yeah, and now that, you know, just trying to cover it up, and now they're paying the price for it.
Yeah, I, what do you think, Andy?
Yeah, I think that it's just a really unique outlook to, like, you know, draw out what they really want to do with the film. And, you know, the first time watching that, I remember watching it, I just remember thinking, I'm like, oh yeah, they moved them, they're screwed. And then it's like, you didn't even move them, did you? And you're like, oh shit, yeah, that sucks for them.
Yeah, I wish they had more money to do this in the budget, but I wish like all of the subdivision houses were like sucked in at the end of the movie, like their own house was, like this family's house was, because it's just like, it would be just like perfect analogy of just the past, just like, fuck, just like screw all of you, like we're gonna take everything from you.
Yeah,
because you have screwed us over. And I almost wonder now, I don't want to go too far into the sequel talk yet, but does the sequels ever mention what happened after the fact, like after all of it, or do they just like, yeah, whatever?
Yeah, they talk about it in the second one. Have you not seen the sequels?
I did not.
Yeah,
I saw the remake, but I didn't see the sequels. But so,
not the remake and not the sequels. God damn it, Kale.
I saw the remake 2 years ago at like a free screening.
Well, I'm sorry for you.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a minute. But I want to ask you guys about the sequels. So what happens in the sequels? Because, I mean, does anyone bring it up? Does the real estate firm get sued? Like, what?
Well,
what happens?
They don't. They deal with the fact that as everything goes on, it actually turns out that it's been evacuated, and they actually turn it into an archaeological dig, a paranormal dig, because they're trying to figure out what happened. And it leads to them actually finding out that it's all tied to Native American spirits and things like that.
Basically, no, go ahead.
No, but I mean, you know, it does play into the fact that some of them lost their real estate license because of that, which is really kind of too bad. Like, Craig T. Nelson really wasn't the one. He didn't know, but he loses his job because of it. And so he's selling vacuum cleaners and things like that. So, I mean, they really do deal with all of that. And it's just very, it's a different movie. It's not quite as good as the first one, but I actually do like a lot of it. It's different.
Yeah, the second one's different, but like they have like throwbacks to the original and stuff like that. Like I said, that tequila scene always like makes me confused because like it's in like a hallway that kind of looks like their other house, and like that's why I always thought that it was the same thing. But then the third one is even more different. They bring the more preacher in and stuff like that. And it's in like apartment.
It's in it's like an apartment complex, like an upscale New York style high rise.
Yeah. And like the preacher's like messing with Carol Ann and all that stuff.
I will say the thing with the third one that I'm not a huge fan of. I never think the Freelings would ever just send Carol Ann to live with other family members after everything in the first two. So I don't like the fact that she's been sent off to live with other people. It feels like a cheap way to get rid of Craig T. Nelson in the film. And so I don't love that a whole lot, but I do like Tom Skerritt in the film. I like the stuff with the preacher. There's some really great imagery in the third one too. Of course the third one came out just while they was still in production, the young girl, Heather, who plays Carol in the three films, passed away. And so they ended up having to heavily retool the ending to even finish the production and bring it all the way home, because there was an entirely different sequence that was planned out that was never shot because of it. I think that there's footage of some of it that wasn't used online. I'm sure you can find it. But for the most part, they had to really heavily retool the third act of the film.
Because they hadn't refilmed? They hadn't finished filming the whole thing? Or
yeah, she died while the film was still in production.
Jesus. That's so...
I mean, MGM wasn't even sure if they wanted to release the movie because they were scared of exploiting her and people being worried that they were trying to make a quick buck off of her death.
Well, it definitely didn't make a quick buck. It only made $14 million.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Tom Skerritt and Nancy Allen, they didn't even really give interviews about the film because they didn't want to deal with the things that, you know, the questions that could come from that. And you can't really blame them for that. But it's they really had to redo the ending and piece it together the way they could.
All right, and so, I mean, what else can we say about the first movie before we get to the remake? Because I have my thoughts on the remake.
The first movie actually made a good amount of money for its day, especially being like a horror movie. It made $76 million, like back then, but like I'm looking at the adjusted, that's over $230 million, like domestic. Now money. Like, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, and not only that, I think a lot of people need to also take into consideration that it would be just a few years later that the PG-13 rating was fully enacted because of two of Spielberg's own films, producer and directed by. And this was a movie that kind of started the conversation, but it wouldn't be until 1984 when Gremlins and Temple of Doom came out. But this played a big part in the idea of maybe we need another rating because it was more drastic than a PG film, but it wasn't quite R.
Yeah, like Poltergeist is on like box office right now. I'm looking at it, it's still PG. And I'm like comparing it to like another original like horror haunted house film. The Conjuring made $137 million. That was considered a massive hit. Yeah. Like the Poltergeist are like with now, like with the adjustment, would almost had $100 million more in box office. Like this movie was a huge hit back then. Yeah. Like, people loved it.
And Poltergeist was originally rated R on top of it. Most people don't.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
Spielberg, of course, talked the MPAA down, just like he talked them down for Temple of Doom and Gremlins, and forced the MPAA to get a new rating system because Spielberg has that power. So that's pretty cool.
No, it's not cool because the rating system is so screwed.
Well, it's broken.
Yeah, because what's the point of having a rating system if you can be talked out of it?
Yeah, exactly. The rating system is so stupid. It pisses me off.
It's worse now than it was then, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, I completely agree.
It was at least in the past, it was consistent. I'm just saying.
Yeah, and that was the other thing that I found surprising about this movie is just how violent and disturbing it is. Like, it's a pretty... I mean, I brought up the guy, ripping his face off, but there's, a kid is almost eaten by a tree, a girl is sucked into the closet. There's a lot of heavy, material that's happening in the movie that revolves around a girl being kidnapped. And you see, everyone, in that family just, falling into pieces because, because they have a daughter that's in the house with them, but they can't they can't protect her. So the thematic material is very dark for a PG, what would be a PG movie today, even for PG-13. So it's interesting that we have evolved in that rating system. And I'm not saying I hate it. I hate that, what the movie is, but I'm saying it's really fascinating, what was considered PG then. And look, I realized 7 years early we got Jaws, but I found this a little bit more disturbing than Jaws.
I think that honestly, we should go back to things like this. Maybe not to this extreme, but I think that we've destroyed our rating system so much at this point that we don't even let our kids have dark images in their shows or movies, lest it become something that, parents cry and scream about. And it's really too bad because I think I know Andy is probably similar to how I am in this situation is, to be honest, I think that part of my upbringing watching a lot of this stuff made me stronger and different. And, I think it made me more aware of how the world actually was. And I think that part of growing up being scared is a natural thing, and we need to quit trying to hide kids from it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I agree, but I mean, even most recently with Goosebumps, Goosebumps in its, it's supposed to be, scary for kids. Right. But the new Goosebumps movie, there's nothing to be afraid of, even if you were a toddler. There's nothing to be afraid of. So I feel like we need more. I think we need kind of the PG horror to come back to where it is, somewhat frightening for kids, but not traumatizing.
And that's why I always loved Gremlins, because again, Gremlins, another Steven Spielberg film, really kind of matched into that. That's why I like Raiders. That's why I like Temple, because they do dive into those darker aspects. Again, I think that's a big thing that needs to be reintroduced to kids, because I think that we're screwing up an entire generation of kids by not letting them be scared. The whole point of Goosebumps when we were growing up was that the idea was, reader beware, you're in for a scare. And that was what drew us into reading them. And that was what was so fun about it, because they were... they're really not as obviously, especially now as we're older, they weren't terribly scary, but they were frightening and they gave you a good jolt. And even the TV show was a little bit scary and that was fun. I miss shows like Are You Afraid of the Dark and that, So Weird and all those. That was the stuff we grew up on, and that's all gone now.
One thing I really miss is the old... times around like the entire month of October when movie or TV stations would just turn over at all their programming to to like a guy in a costume just like talking about horror movies as they just like played nonstop horror movies for the entire month.
Yes, and of course that was a big play.
Doesn't AMC still do that? Doesn't AMC still do that, or is that now gone?
No, like they would like it would be going like 20, like they would just like repeat it overnight, but like it would have like that's they would like basically. I remember when I was a kid, like TNT and stuff, like they would have like 12-hour long marathons of just like horror movies with like one host and all this stuff. But like they got like they just stopped doing all that stuff because like they need to have their, you know, their syndications that are on every day and at the same times. And it's just, what the hell is like, you know, like bring stuff that people haven't seen back from the past so that like it continues to live on.
Yeah, I think that's how a lot of, you know, small, like, not like flop, well, I guess flops as well, but, you know, cult horror favorites kind of grew out is because of TNT and all that stuff, right? Isn't that, those horror movies survived because they were featuring on TNT at midnight and whatnot. So, yeah, I would like to see that come back and even get, you know, some smaller horror movies get more recognition for it.
But and that's the thing is that it wasn't even just horror movies. I mean, there was a lot of movies that found a second life because of things like Shawshank Redemption, a movie that was critically lambasted, but then became a critical darling in what is considered one of the all-time great movies. Same with It's a Wonderful Life. Horror movies just fell into that that a lot, especially things like the Halloween sequels and things like that, especially when they would get these like TV edit cuts, which actually added material in that made stories more compelling. Things you see with Halloween 2, The Goonies, things like that. But Poltergeist 1 and 2 especially, those played on TV a lot growing up. And so that's part of the reason I know the movie so well is I grew up watching it a lot because it was always, always on.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. We need to bring that back. We need to add more scares into children, even if it means they're gonna stay up till midnight, or I guess you guys would stay up 2 or 3 a.m. to watch it. So yeah, I would highly recommend bringing that back, and not to traumatize children, but to, you know, but to also, you know, entice the horror, you know, film community with, you know, film horror films that people should, you know, check out, or so horror films can have a second life, but also, you know, so kids can have, you know, that reality check, that, you know, that sense of reality that not everything is rainbows and Cartoon Network.
Oh, I completely.
And that was not a, yeah, and that was not a dig on Cartoon Network.
No,
go ahead.
And it's a true point, and that's exactly what I'm getting at is we're so far gone from a time where Poltergeist would be a thing that families would actually go see it as a summer blockbuster that it's almost kind of sad. I mean, closest thing in a lot of ways that I can come up with recently in recent years would be The Conjuring, but because we are so far past the family horror films that they don't try to do it anymore, and The Conjuring just goes straight to the R rating. And
I was going to say, why, like, The Conjuring, like, besides cussing, like, why is that rated R?
It was only rated R for the atmosphere. I almost
That's
think
dumb.
That should have probably been
PG-13. Yeah.
I think
like the remake for Poltergeist was rated PG-13. I never saw it because I heard terrible things, but, like, this movie, like, that movie, like, tanked hard.
So, I mean, are we going to talk about the remake, Kale? Because if we could jump in from that point, I'd love to say something about it.
Let me go first, because I think I will be... I don't love this movie, but I think from your guys' responses, I think I'll be the nicest. So, but I'm not going to be... But let me say this about the remake. It's very, you know... It is very similar to the first one, but still somehow it doesn't feel like a feature-length movie at all. It feels like there is so much padding and so much, like, just we're just waiting to get to the third act. Like, and that's one of the reasons why I don't. And also, Sam Rockwell, he was stoned out of his mind when he made this movie. I'm sorry, Sam Rockwell. I don't know what it was for this movie, but he looked like he'd rather be in a ditch than this movie. So it's not the worst. Like, it's competently shot. But other than that, I don't really care for the Poltergeist remake. And from the box office, it seemed like no one else did either. So who let loose?
Well, actually, I was going to say, I think the biggest problem with this movie is that it was originally conceived in a much different way than what we ended up with. This was a film that MGM was hell-bent on making. It was going to happen one way or another. They were going to friggin' make something off of the Poltergeist name, whether people liked it or not. But the difference was, is originally, this was supposed to be a sequel. Most people don't realize that. And I think that that's the biggest friggin' problem with this movie, is that they totally throw all the stuff that was actually interesting and all these ideas. I followed this production forever. The original idea was that it was going to turn out that they were actually living back in the original neighborhood, and that had been rebuilt on and all this. Like, they were going to actually build the mythology that somewhat, a lot like what Jurassic World did. You know, Jurassic Park, the dinosaurs got out, but for some reason someone decided, you know, let's go back and finish it. It was the same idea. Was, well, it all happened, but oh well. And, you know, it was going to turn out at the end it was the same neighborhood, and that they were being cursed by the same, or being haunted by the same poltergeist. That alone would have at least been...
That's interesting.
Yeah, it would have been a much more interesting movie, because it was something that was actually supposed to be like a third act reveal versus something that was going to be... you know, known going in. And I think that would have been a really cool reveal. And it's really too bad it didn't go that way, because what we ended up with was a movie that doesn't really have any resemblance to the original. I mean, it's Poltergeist in name, it has a scary clown, and there's a family in the middle of it. But, I mean, outside of that, it's just bullshit. Like, it is one of the few times that I legitimately just don't like a movie. And it's weird because Sam Raimi produced this thing, and he has a much better track
record
horror movies. I mean, maybe not the greatest, like The Boogeyman is not amazing. I kind of like that movie. I have it on DVD, but like, this is such a badly put together film. It's such a misguided film. Everything about it is just not good. And it's sad because you've got guys like Sam Rockwell in it. You had Jared Harris in it. Like, I just don't understand what happened while they were making it that just careened it into the way that they did. And I mean, this movie sat on the shelf for years before it was finally released too. So, I mean, it's sad. It's sad because this was a movie that should have been good. It should have had a lot of really cool stuff in it. And I don't know. I just wanted more from this, and it was not a good movie.
Yeah.
People, before I say something.
I like I said, I never saw it because it was tanking so bad. I just noticed that Box Office Mojo has like an adjuster like on every page. And like, I put Poltergeist 2015. In the 1982, and it made $16 million in the 1982 money. So this movie made like $60 million less than the original, like in its own like time frame. That should tell you something. Like, this movie was hot garbage. No one liked it.
Well. That's, Patrick, all of that is really interesting to me to hear. But what's more tragic about this movie is, and you brought up the cast, I'm more shocked by the people behind it, that they turned around such a not so really compelling movie. I mean, you have Gil Kenan, who did Monster House, which I think is a really decent, you know, Spielbergian, you know, animated movie. And then you have, of course, Sam Raimi. And then you have David Lindsay Abraer, I think that's his name, writing the script. And he's a really talented screenwriter. So it's so odd that they kind of just... And actually, I'm going to disagree with you, Patrick. I think it is more I think it is more beat by beat by beat of Poltergeist, but just in like a lame way and not very interesting way.
Well, that's enough for me to say that it's not Poltergeist, though, because, yeah, it may have a lot of the same beats and stuff, but if you're not doing it to the way Poltergeist did it, then you're not Poltergeist, if that makes sense. You know, like, you can be a lame knockoff of something, but it doesn't make you the thing that you are. I mean, it's when you think about soda brands, like, you've ever had RC Cola or something, it's a lame knockoff of something like Coca-Cola, but it's not Coca-Cola. It's the same kind of thing to me, so I don't see it as Poltergeist.
I see where you're coming from, but yeah, I think it is like a knockoff slash we're just doing the same beats and not even in a good or obvious way. And that's really the most disappointing part of Poltergeist is, or this remake, is that it just doesn't do anything really interesting or compelling. Even with the talent behind it. So, and I'll say this, Rosemary DeWitt, I think that's the actress name who plays the mom. I think she did a good job, but other than that, I thought Sam Rockwell was phoning it in. Jared Harris was doing his absolute best, but again, he's kind of working with the same material that he, you know, he's working with material that's already been done, but and better. So there's not a lot of ways he could have topped it. So it's just, I would have liked to have seen that approach, the approach you were describing more, you know, more than what we got, Patrick. But I just wasn't into this, you know, remake at all. And
that's exactly what I mean. Like, if we're not into it, then they did the wrong thing. And that's why,
yeah, and
had they gone that other direction, the direction that was originally the what they were envisioning, at least I would have enjoyed it. At least a little bit more. It would have been different.
Yeah, it would have been different, but I don't. Yeah, and I remember like hearing about the movie. I didn't follow the production like you did, Patrick. But I mean, I remember like hearing like all these directors coming in, and I remember, you know, MGM really wanting to make it along with, you know, that RoboCop remake with Darren Aronofsky. Like,
yeah,
MGM was like kind of in the what Sony is right now, what Sony Pictures is dealing with right now. Like, they're in the phase where they're just greenlighting all sorts of, you know, all of their brands and projects they created. And ultimately, they just collapsed.
I will at least give them that RoboCop actually dared to be different than the original and try new things. I wish Poltergeist had at least been ballsy enough to do something like that, but they didn't. And that's what's so tragic. And I mean, Spielberg really had nothing to do with any of these movies outside of the first one. And there was rumors that he might even come back to produce this one. Had he done it, maybe we'd be having a different conversation. Because no way I see it turning out the way it did. But, man, there's a few movies that just bum me out, and this is one of them.
It is, because, I mean, this is, you know, a classic movie, and it doesn't really have the best, like, pedigree because of what happened with the curse and, you know, and also they had to kind of, like you said, with the third movie, they kind of had to the third act a lot, so it doesn't already have the best like name recognition. So for it to steep even further, just to have like a typical, oh, they remade something from the 80s. Here we go. Let's throw it in the garbage. It's very disappointing. Do we have any more final thoughts on Poltergeist?
See the original. You have to. It's one of the essential cornerstone horror films of all time. Didn't we talk about it in the 13 Horrors?
Yeah, it was definitely.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Go back to Real Film Chatter. We covered the original Poltergeist, the first 13 Nights of Horror that we did, where we were only talking about horror films. We try to do it around every Halloween or so. And this is a cornerstone film, like Andy said. I mean, it's impossible not to fall in love with this movie, in my opinion. It's a movie that is very much one that anyone who is a horror fan should watch. It's a movie that anyone who's a Steven Spielberg fan should watch. It's a movie that anyone who's a Tobe Hooper fan should watch. And straight up, it's just a movie that any film fan needs to watch for the production history alone. And I think that alone is cause to watch it, because the debate will rage on forever who really directed this movie. I would love to have that conversation with you guys. So, you know, let's start it up. It's a great conversation to be had.
It is. And I will, and I hope one day someone either writes a book about the production, or I don't know if you guys ever saw on A&E or Bio, but one of those series had like, one of those channels had like a series like called The Inside Story, where they did like 2 hour length, you know, documentaries about movies.
A&E. I used to watch those all the time.
Yeah, and I would love to see like one of the like Inside Story Poltergeist, just full detail, full. Because I mean, this is a story that's worth telling. This is almost, and I hate to say it because it's so cliche, but it's almost as interesting as the movie itself. Like the behind production history is just about as interesting as the story itself, as the movie itself. So I would love to see it one day and even answer the age old fact that maybe, you know, was it, you know, a Spielberg movie or a Tobe Hooper movie, or was it, and this is what I think is, I think it was just the perfect melting pot of the two. So, yeah. So do we have any more thoughts? Or are we good?
See this movie. Let's talk about it.
Yep. See this movie. Let us know if it was. Let us know in the comment section of iTunes and Podbean if this was a Hooper movie or a Spielberg movie.
And tell me that Craig T. Nelson is clearly dad of the year in this movie, because Craig T. Nelson frickin' rocks this as Freeling. Steve Freeling, one of the all-time great movie dads. Thank you so much for giving us that, you guys. Craig T. Nelson rocks.
Craig T. Nelson, you are an MVP.
For real.
So with that said, Andy, where can the good people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at the Talking Can. Definitely tweet me about Poltergeist and how much you love it. If you haven't seen it, go see it. Tweet me about it. Be like, thank you. You just changed my life. And I'll be like, you're welcome, bro.
All right, Patrick.
That was beautiful, man. You guys can find me on Twitter at PJ_Campbell, or Facebook at Patrick Campbell @PJ. You can also find all of my writing over at SoCalThrills.com. And, of course, you can find my podcast, Real Film Chatter, REEL Film Chatter, where I get to co-host it every week with that fine gentleman over in the corner of the Talking Can and our guest, Kale, from time to time. We have a great time talking movies. And, again, you know, tweet at me. I want to talk to you guys about the Tobe Hooper Steven Spielberg thing. So tweet at me. Let's have this conversation. It's a lot of fun. And again, the real MVP here, Craig T. Nelson. Back to you.
All right. And you can find me at Movie Kale. And then you can also follow this podcast at The Youth Critic. And then you can follow the channel where The Youth Critic posts regularly at KHC Network. And please let us know, not only let us know what you think about Poltergeist through our Twitter handles, but also let us know in the iTunes comment section. Subscribe. Let us know what you think about Poltergeist. And thanks everyone for listening. And we'll be back with you next week, where we talk, where we get really, really Trekkie, and we talk about Star Trek: The Wrath of Khan.
Beyond the darkness, beyond the human evolution, is Khan, a genetically superior tyrant. Exiled to a barren planet, banished by a starship commander he is destined to destroy. Left for dead, he has survived.
I'll chase him round the moons of Nibia and round the Antares maelstrom and round perdition's flames before I give him up. There she is.